Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this week, we've got David Harrison. Now, this is David's first time on the show, and David does a way better job introducing himself and sort of laying down some of the groundwork as far as his career in the industry. But I can tell you, you know, this particular show is really, really fun for me. Like, this is a lot different than any other show we've ever done. And we're gonna talk fishing. It's a real big picture kind of conversation, a lot of perspective conversation. We do get technique specific with some stories and just some fun, you know, just looking back a little bit. But to sort of premise this conversation between Dave and I, that we're always learning and we're always just really thirsty for the next little bit of content or something, an article or a podcast or a video or a television show that can help us learn more and enjoy the fishing experiences that we have wherever we're at, you know, wherever you're at, whatever species, whatever home body of water you're on. And David has a really, really great breakdown of how he feels the industry has helped him. It's something that I can relate to so much. And, you know, just the perspective, sort of giving our perspective, mostly David, giving his perspective to you guys, the consumers, on what to be looking for when you're consuming content and getting better as an angler. What are those really, like, key buttons to be paying attention to within yourself as we get better as anglers? And it's a really fun interview. David breaks down some really, really cool stuff. It's definitely gonna make you think outside the box. It's definitely gonna make you think a lot about yourself and what it's gonna take for you to get better and get leveled up to the next rung on the ladder, so to speak, as an angler. And really, really fun interview. Anyways, long intro here, but very excited to have a conversation with David Harrison. And we're going to get into this interview, but first, I want to talk a little bit about the Virtual Angling app. You've heard me say it before. If you listen to this show, if you enjoy the learning, the fishing conversations we have on this show, give the Virtual Angling app a try. Download it wherever you get your apps, on your cell phone. You'd be so impressed by all the access you have to top-tier anglers across the Midwest and beyond, and all the great fishing content that is on there tailored for exactly what you're trying to learn and trying to get access to, as well as all the archived episodes of the JMO Podcast. If you're wondering where all the past episodes have gone, that's where they're at. If you subscribe to the Virtual Angling app, you're going to have access to all the archived episodes of the JMO Podcast. That means every single week you're going to have access to the newest JMO Podcast every single week wherever you get your podcasts. When the next one comes up, we pull the old one down and it goes on the Virtual Angling app. It'll live there forever. If you ever want to access past episodes of the JMO Podcast, download and subscribe to the Virtual Angling app. You'll have access to just a pile of great content, fishing content over there, as well as the episodes historically from the JMO Podcast. Just want to plug that in there. Now let's get into the interview with David Harrison. Okay, man. Well, David Harrison, appreciate the time a whole bunch, man. This is your first time on the show. Welcome. But, you know, like everybody, first timers, you're going to have to introduce yourself a little bit. But one fun thing about this interview, you know, we're going to talk a lot of fishing on this, and to cover all the ground that we have intended for this particular show, you're going to have to integrate a lot of information while you introduce yourself. This is all going to make sense when you start talking, but you have worked in the industry for some time. And, you know, you and I have a couple things in common that, you know, we work in the industry and the industry has influenced us a lot with, you know, just fishing and learning our fishing skills. We're kind of privileged, so to speak, as to the access that we have. And you've had some tremendous access in your career to some tremendous fishermen and tremendous fishing experiences. And it has helped you learn, and that's what this show is going to be largely about. But, you know, while you introduce yourself here and tell us a little bit about, you know, your career and everything that we have planned for this show, I want you to kind of mix all that in throughout this. You know, you're introducing yourself, you're telling us about your experiences, but definitely let's get into the fishing and all that sort of stuff as soon as we possibly can, David. So, yeah, starting off with where you're from and, you know, your career, let's just, I'm just going to pass it on to you now. I've spoken enough and I'll just let you kind of unload on us.
All right, Taylor. Yeah, David Harrison. I've been writing for the In Fisherman for about 12, 13 years. I think I've done about 50 different articles on all their different species. It got started with a pike article using planer boards and big swim baits. I think it was 2011, 2012 timeframe. And then it just kind of grew from there. I've written for quite a few other publications during that time, but and a lot of my stuff shows up into the In Fisherman Guide, as well as the main magazine at times. So the interesting thing and the reason I thought you and I had a lot in common is, you know, we were kind of thrown into this industry a little bit. My original job or my trained job, I'm a mechanical and materials engineer for a large contracting company. And I design experiments and write lab reports for them and do data analysis. And to me, the fishing kind of went along with that. And you'll see how that experience fits into this as well. But, you know, after 12 years in the industry and writing all those articles, when I and for the end fisherman, of course, you know, when I call an angler, even if I cold call them, they usually answer. And it still surprises me to this day. And I just got to spend some time at ICAST a couple weeks ago. And you know, it's fun to be able to turn around and shake these people's hands. And then it just hits me. Oh my gosh, you know, that's this person, you know, whereas before in the industry, they wouldn't have known who I was. And it certainly has opened quite a few doors, but our discussion today is about how to catch up. You know, fishing is an interesting sport or activity to learn. There's no right or wrong way. I could put something in an article that worked for me and doesn't happen anywhere else in the United States or something. And truthfully, you've already covered. I live in Lawrence, Kansas. Down the street is Ned Cady, the Ned Rig, you know, and the Midwest Finesse. Truthfully, I took over for a lot of the articles he was writing when he retired from the In Fisherman. And then you've also had our local guy, Brian Andreka, on your show and on the TV show and the podcast. So I don't think I need to talk a lot about Kansas fishing. You know, this podcast is about learning to fish. So it's fair. It's going to be generic.
Yeah, broad broad appeal, as we say.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, fits in and somebody can connect with this. So one of my favorite articles I wrote a couple of years ago for one of the ice fishing guides in the In Fisherman, it really was a bunch of sayings. And I think I came up with some of them. Some people told them to me. So I wanted to build this podcast off of some of those sayings.
Yeah, man. Almost like a book of poems. It's like a book of David Harrison's sayings. Yeah, man. No, I'm so with that. And, you know, just to kind of double down on what you're saying, it's like, yeah, it's so cool sometimes probably for people that know you or, you know, read your articles or whatever, like the story behind that, you know, that, you know, it can be really interesting and very, you know, we have very, you know, probably humble fishing experiences that we grew up with or whatever relationship we have with fishing is, you know, very, you know, very humble, very organic and authentic, you know, of a passion for fishing. But realistically, like by the time I started working in the industry, I think when I met Jason Mitchell and I started working for him, I could probably count on, you know, all my fingers and toes. I probably did not need all my fingers and toes to count how many times I had caught a daily limit of walleyes in a day. You know, like I'm in my for whole sure. life where I had, you know, that probably less than 10 times had I caught like a complete North Dakota limit of walleyes to take home and clean, you know, and then just to know where I was at with my experience, time on the water, not knowing anything about anything And getting to this point. And so I'm super excited to have you on so we can bounce off of each other and help, you know, teach people what they need to be looking at for learning, you know, and just sort of, you know, help articulate, you know, what works with, like you say, broad appeal. Might not necessarily be species specific, but just fishing specific. And, talking about learning and learning something every time you go out. So definitely I'm going to throw it back on you. We've got a couple notes written down. Let's just start there, David. Talk to me about learning how you sort of set yourself up to learn nowadays and sort of where you've gotten in the point of just educating yourself.
You mentioned it there. I'm still amazed. I'll go out for an evening or a couple hours or, you know, one of those things where you're working on your boat, you just want to make sure it works. And I learned something every trip. We just did a trip up to Otter Tail County in Minnesota. We pulled into the lake and my nephew hops off out of the car, grabs a rod and goes down to the dock. And, you know, that his 1 hour on the dock really kicked off the whole 2 weeks. I mean, he knew, you know, he already caught some bass. He'd already had a pike follow. He said there's no weeds by the dock, and, you know, all this other stuff. Even in those 2 hours, and this kid grew up, his name's Sam Keeley. He grew up fishing a dock in the Ozarks. And he knows more about that dock than anyone will ever know in their lives. And every time I go to a pond, you know, there was a time here in Kansas I didn't have a boat, so I just visited the local ponds. I got to one, and it had a bunch of vegetation around it. Like, I could hardly even cast the lure out there. And it's funny, because then at that point, it clicks in your head, oh, that's why they invent slop frogs and other lures that stay on the surface and can make it through that type of stuff. And then, boom, you understand a part of fishing that a lot of other people understand. Now, I've been on trips where I didn't catch anything, and I've learned as much on those trips as the ones where I caught every fish in the lake. So you know, whether it's a pond or a stream or a river, I mean, you've heard so many stories. You know, some of my editors are like, hey, I grew up fishing the stream on my bike. You know, every little trip, the time on the water trumps everything else. You know, I don't read any articles. Don't read any more articles before you go fishing again. Don't watch another TV show. Okay, maybe a few, you know, maybe some Jason, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But literally the time on the water trumps and that's where fishing is fantastic, because you could have, you know, a hand-me-down pole, a 10-cent hook, and a worm you got out of your garden, and you could learn something important about fish, whether you catch them or not, etc. So, you know, you don't learn on the couch. And I have been there. The Bass Pro Shops in Denver, I lived in Denver for 20 years, is right on I-70. So everybody that's driving out to go skiing or vacation, they stop there. And I have been in there on the afternoon, and you just see these people wandering around. If they would have driven one more hour and gotten out and fished instead of waiting at the store and looking around for an hour, like, they could be learning. But instead, you don't learn stuff at the store, and you don't learn stuff on the couch. Now, I study learning as a teacher in a lot of ways. I heard this great quote from a guy from the Air Force I was working with. He said, education is where you know about something, but you haven't done it yet, right? Because you go through high school and you learn math. Well, you haven't been paid to go do math or to read something or you haven't gone out and done it. But learning is when you hear about something and within a week you're out doing it. And that attitude right there is a huge deal. If you're not out there on that water playing around with a jig, casting it somewhere, you know, that is better than being on your couch. You're never gonna say, hey, I know how to fish a jig, without going out there and casting. And I've been through this a million, you know, someone tells me, and I'm interviewing someone for an article, they tell me a new technique or something, and I try and go fishing once a week on Fridays, and I'm out there trying to recreate it or trying to do it, and it takes Oh my gosh, fishing takes hours to develop that learning. You don't go out and learn it in 30 minutes. You don't go out there. Like a fishing trip of 12 hours, I might only learn a couple of things. So to me, you know, until you have caught a fish doing something or completed that loop, even if a guide helped you get there, you know, they handed you a rod with a glide bait on it and you cast it out there and they said, hey, keep casting, it's going to work. And finally you felt that bite. You went out on the ice and you've been jigging for hours and you finally, you know, what does a fish look like on the screen? And boom, there's a second mark on your Vexilar. And now, you know, you've experienced it. And that's a huge, like that's probably the number one thing is getting out on the water.
Yeah, man. And talk to me about, you know, getting back to the premise of having you on. It's like, talk to me about when you were realizing it. What were some of the experiences that you had, or, you know, whether it was an interview for an article or something that you consumed or something that you recreated after the fact, like when the light bulb started going off for you as an industry man, you know, writing and doing these things, but also experiencing fishing at the time, like what were some of those experiences that you were going through that when you really started to sort of build that obsession of, you know, learning about fishing instead of educating yourself on fishing?
That I could go on forever. Let's start in high school. So this is 1980s, 1990s. People don't realize in the 80s and 90s, you had three books in the library and you had magazines. I mean, you don't know how many people I meet that say, hey, I have a stack of In Fishermen's in my basement and I've read them all. Because in the 80s and 90s, that's what you, the In Fisherman used to be 300 pages six times a year. I mean, now it's like 50. I mean, it's so much thinner, but then you have all the online, I mean, we have even more content now. But so what I had done, you know, in high school, junior high, whatever, you know, I'm learning how to fish for bass and bluegill. I'm living in Wichita, Kansas. Bass and bluegill. I had some lakes I could go catch 100 bluegill and 5 or 10 bass while I'm at it. But then my dad and I go in together and we buy a Coleman crawdad. I just wrote an article about Coleman crawdads for the Bass Guide with Mike Iaconelli and the Fishful Thinker from Colorado.
Oh, Chad LaChance?
Chad LaChance.
Oh, and, you know, I love that guy. I love that guy.
Because everybody has had a little boat in their life. A Coleman crawdad was ours. And for me, we got a little sonar. We put it on a board. We, you know, clamped it to the back. And right in high school, right as I was leaving for college, I figured out that on some of these small lakes, I could find a brush pile on that sonar, which you think you know what a brush pile looks like, but this is all 2D sonar, and you, it just takes, you got to go out there and find it. And we didn't have side imaging or anything. We just drove around these little lakes. And then I put a crappie jig on a rod, and I have no idea how to, I don't have a buoy. Maybe I had a buoy. I put it by, you know, I'm flying blind, and I put that jig down there. I don't get a bite, but when I reel up, we're actually getting kicked off the lake. It's a long story. When I reeled up, a crappie followed it to the surface. And then I went to college, and I met, like, that's a story right there. Think of all the steps. I had to read an article. I had to buy a lure. I had an ultralight rod. I had to go out there and drive around. I had to interpret this sonar. I mean, think of all these skills. And then I completely leave all that learning on the table for 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
And then 3 years, you know, 6 years ago, I moved to Kansas and I walleye fished a lot. And I didn't get into crappie until LiveScope came out, which is almost cheating. But at the same time, like, I picked up that learning from that point. How to stay over a brush pile, how to present to crappie, how to, where they live throughout the year. You know, that's just part of it. But at the same, you know, the other half is I've been doing these articles on catfishing, and catfish were the lower part on my list. They don't have very many in Colorado, so we didn't chase them. But I've been doing articles on catfish, and, you know, catfishing, the rigs are very simple. There's like four rigs that you probably should be using. But last fall, my friend Paul Hansen and I, we went out and basically for like five trips, we only took catfish rods. We caught bait. We put it on there and we drove around. You know, so we have all these skills that, you know, as anglers, we're putting into this new species. And I'd written about how to do a Santee Cooper rig and stuff, but I had never really done it enough.
The JMO podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul, running on the power of promises kept.
Yeah. I could explain and, it you know, to
and
someone.
To premise that, it's not, you know, you know, you're writing articles, but you're interviewing these guys, right? Like, just like this podcast, you know, it's like interviewing anglers that have done it. Well, I've never done it, but I'm learning it, you know, and it's like, and so, and then, you know, sometimes, yeah, just being able to, like, convey that information really, yeah, I mean, that's just what we're all about, you know? It's like that learning and the obsession over that learning, and yeah, like, so to keep covering ground, though, I will, you know, we're still on that same topic, but just to kind of, you know, so now you're talking about graduating high school and, like, the trigger going off about, you know, having confidence in you know, finding that brush pile that should have crappies on it and getting that follow, you know, and having confidence in a technology that almost seemed, you know, space age, right, at the time. And we're still dealing with that.
Oh,
you know, technology is so far beyond our own human brain, right? The average guy doesn't even know we're talking forward sonar all the time, and we got to learn how to interpret it. But it's so hard to have confidence, maybe not so much confidence in the electronics, but it's almost like I just don't have confidence in myself that I even know, you know, what I'm looking at. But now, you know, you've been in the industry and you've done these things. You've written about learning. We're talking about learning how to fish. So where do you stand on some of that stuff? Let's, you know, we'll keep going with the stories because I think the stories are going to be the most relatable here with this conversation. So keep going with that. You know, we're talking about catfish right now or whatever you want to keep talking about. But, like, where do you stand now with learning? Like, what are some of the benchmarks and things that you sort of have articulated or dialed in to, like, where you feel like you are learning this stuff?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of my biggest things to myself is about the first 50 fish. And if you want to go back to that catfish, I think I'm at blue cat number 39 or so. I haven't even caught 50 of them. You know, but at 50 fish is about where you know it's not you. It's not your rig. You know, it's not your location. You know the fish, like, you know you need to change a color, or you need to try a different lure, or you need to go faster. You're past the bait. You're not completely lost. And I think this saying kind of came out when I was ice fishing, because ice fishing was about 10 years ago when I really started doing that. And that was one of the catch-up ones, because I was now writing about it or experiencing it, and I needed to catch up. And I realized, boy, I've caught like five fish through the ice. I can explain it, but I don't have that feel. And I kept track of that for a few years, and I'd be like, when do I feel like I'm an ice fisherman? And it was about where I caught 50, in that case, like rainbow trout or the basics in Colorado. You know, maybe it's bluegills or somewhere else. You know, 50 fish have come through the hole. And I wrote an article on that. But let's take walleye, for example. 50 fish doesn't just apply to walleye. I mean, you had a great mention, you know, limits of walleye on 5 or 10 in your whole life, you know, but think about this. One of the best seminars I've ever been to, and if you go to a sports show, you go to a seminar, this is the one I remember the most. There were three ways. It's from Nathan Zielinski. There are three ways to catch walleye: jigs, live bait, and crankbait. And that is like simplified everything for me. Like, I don't need 1,000 different lures. I need three. You know, I need three good ones or something like that. I would add swim baits these days you know, in the last 10 years, swim baits, but they're kind of like a halfway, they complete the circle between crankbaits and jigs. Maybe that's a way to think about it. All right, so now we got three or four different baits times 50 fish on each. We're up to 200 walleyes. And I'm actually going to break those down because jigs, you got plastic, but you also have glide baits. And they are, you know, you might have caught 1,000 fish on a shiner and a jig. And I've literally never tied one of those on living in Kansas and Colorado. You know, and you switch to a glide bait and you don't trust it the same. So you need 50 fish on each bait. You know, live bait, you're either pulling it like a bottom bouncer or a Lindy rig, or maybe it's under a float. And I think last couple of years I've really been using slip bobbers more, and I've probably passed the 50 fish threshold in the last 2 years on slip bobbers. And then crankbaits, you got planer boards, you got flat lines, you got lead core. You know, I don't cast crankbaits a lot, but that's a big deal in some of these areas. And then jerkbaits on top of that. So now you've got 1, 2, 3, you know, 7 or 8 different presentations, and you're up to like 400 walleyes at that point. Now, that doesn't even count. If you've been around fishing very long, you know the different times of year are completely different. So now you got winter, which may be ice, it may not. Early spring, you know, especially for walleye, would be the spawn period. Springtime temperatures when they're just, you know, really putting the feed bag on. Summer when the bait is peaking and they're eating, but they're kind of spread out. And then fall as those water temperatures go back down. I mean, I've added it up. I think you have to catch to become and cover and learn all these techniques close to 2,000 walleyes.
Yeah, I love that template.
That's on one type of lake. I had caught 2,000 walleyes in Colorado, and I came to Kansas, and I was fishing 6 feet too deep.
Yeah.
And if I went to South Dakota, North Dakota, I think a lot of things are the same, but they're going to be different. Montana, Minnesota, you know, you're up to like 8,000. I think a lot of people will say, you know, and it keeps you focused. Like, I need to use jerk baits more, not just for 10 fish, not for 20. I need to get up to that 30 and 40 and 50 fish. And if you're a good fisher person, you're going to get there faster. If you hire guides, you're going to get there even faster. But, you know, there's something about that number.
Oh my gosh. I'm obsessed with that. You know, you sent me, you know, just sort of like some little notes on that thought. And the way you just explained it just has me so fired up about getting back out there and fishing. And I think, you know, the light bulb is going to go off for a lot of people after what you just said. I mean, it definitely does for me. It sort of just gives you a good template. You can now start keeping track of like tangible real numbers and start to feel these feelings, you know, of confidence as you work your way through a bait, like you said, throughout times of year. And, you know, yeah. We all probably don't need to feel like we got to catch all those fish for each specific scenario, because we already know what scenarios we like to fish the most. But that's what it is. It's like, if you like catching walleyes on a jig in a certain lake, and you're trying to identify those patterns, like, just use that as a template. Because if you're, so many of us, the only, you know, comparison, the only template, the only bar that is set is, you know, in a lot of cases, it's probably just the boat next to you, or you know, your friends or people that you talk about fishing with at work or whatever. And it's probably not that hard for a lot of, you know, the average guy in the Midwest to be a better fisherman than the guy in the cubicle, you know, than the person in the cubicle next to him, right? Or, you know, somebody that you meet at the bait shop or whatever it is, how we all talk about fishing, we all probably feel or give ourselves a little bit more credit. But, you know, I think if you really wanted to put yourself to the test, you know, the average person probably feels super lucky to catch 50 walleyes in an entire summer based upon how often they get to go out, how much time, you know, that time on the water is probably the big one, right? And everything that you learn, even when you're not catching fish, but you know that you're putting enough time on the water to put yourself in that position. Also, you know, some of us just don't get to live near or around these capital, you know, walleye factories, right? And so we're fishing tougher water, you know, smaller population densities, you know, just really sort of wrap your head around this, wrapping my head around what you're saying is so huge. And just knowing each situation that I've ever been in where I really wanted to learn walleyes, it's like, yeah, you really have to catch some. And then you have to repeat that process somewhere to kind of validate it a little bit, but it needs to keep happening. And season to season, like nobody's going to be able to say that they are a stellar walleye jigger in a season. It's like a body of work, right? Like it's like, right. It's just crazy like that. And so I just love how you're relating all this or putting this all down. Like, man, I can just see myself probably for the rest of my life, I'm going to be referring to this podcast to everyone I know just to like if you can understand all of these things about yourself and how your fishing is, like it's going to create better conversations with anglers, right? Because we learn from each other and it's like, you know, just knowing what, you know, knowing where all that information is coming from and how much time people are spending on the water is a big deal for what their learning curve is, you know?
Which of these techniques have you, you know, would you say you've done the most, like you have the most confidence in, and which one would you like, you know, you're at that 10 or 20 fish.
Yeah. Dude, I think everybody needs to, we stop right here. Everybody just ask yourself that. Yeah. It's like, and I'll say for me, gosh, that's a good question because I am like so embedded right now, like mentally into my learning. And I would say, okay, you know, live bait is probably the golden standard where whether it's a Lindy rig or, you know, in the Dakotas here, you know, we pull a lot of bottom bouncers, right? A lot of slow death.
Most walleye people get into bottom bouncing in Colorado was the quickest way to 50 fish, Lindy rigging.
Yeah.
And there were spots and times of the year where you could catch 50 fish in 2 hours.
If you have any fishing memory that you would like to commemorate or have questions about commemorating a fishing memory with a replica made of any fish that has ever graced your net, get in touch with Rizavi Fish Replicas, owned and operated by Jamie Rizavi over in New Rockford, North Dakota at Rizavi Taxidermy Studio. You can find them online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com or find them on Facebook at Rizavi Taxidermy Studio. You can see the pictures. Here at the JMO headquarters in Devil's Lake, we have some phenomenal replicas made by Jamie and his crew hanging on our walls, which we absolutely love. They look absolutely perfect, just like the fish that were reeled in that day. And every chance we get to go in and admire them and tell those stories and share those stories with each other, we absolutely do. Again, if you have any questions about getting a fish replica made to commemorate any great trophy memory you have of fishing, get in touch with Jamie Rizavi at Rizavi Fish Replicas. You won't be disappointed. You know,
good at that.
We live in the Dakotas where you can have multiple lines. Bottom bouncers allow you, there's so much flexibility with, you know, speed. Yeah. And you can be very precise on structure that you can't be, say, with a bottom or with pulling crankbaits. You know, you need spots to be a touch bigger. Right. You know, and so bottom bouncers can fish more spots. And then, you know, but then jig fishing, I've never been very proficient at, like, I've never just been good enough. Jig fishing for me has always been too slow, or I'm too slow where I don't fish enough water. You know, I'm learning on that.
Yeah.
And so I think this year has been big. I've caught a lot of fish. I've caught a lot of nice walleyes this year on a jig. And I would say I'm really getting close to that 50 fish on a jig, you know, with, you know, where I'm utilizing, you know, all my other faculties to get in on it, you know, but pulling cranks is definitely one that I've been excited. Like all my buddies that I do fish with know that I've been obsessing over crankbaits here in the Dakotas for the last couple of years. And I've been trying all kinds of things and I'm getting there, but I'm probably at that, like, you know, 30 or 40 fish, right? Like, you know, and granted, yeah. I'm only counting fish in this, you know, you got to be self-aware. You got to be honest with yourself, I think, too, where I've probably caught some fish that I didn't deserve, or maybe they were just some, you know, some fish that, you know, I'm counting 30 or 40 fish that probably that really sort of meant something to the process, you know, where I caught them with all the intention of what I was doing, and they were the right fish. You know, it wasn't, you know, 10, 11 inch fish, you know, that were just sort of randomly up shallow one day or whatever it is, you know, like, you know, getting the right fish with the right intentions is what, where I would say that really counts. And so pulling cranks, is definitely not where I'm at, with confidence.
Well, I think my story, I have a story about slip floats, and this is from a couple years ago. I think I had that kind of beginner mentality. I'm on a new lake in Kansas. I do tournaments with my dad, Ron Harrison, just kind of for fun to get out and to focus me on walleye for a while. And I'm pulling around this flat with a bottom bouncer, which works great in Kansas, and just kind of like searching for fish. I'm paying attention to my electronics, but in Kansas, you're either in 2 foot of water or it's there's so many other fish out there. And I make four or five passes around this flat. And you start to realize I'm catching all my fish in one spot, right? I mean, why go out and turn around when I know I'm going to catch them when I pass this waypoint? And I think that's what it takes. And that could be 10 or 100 trips for someone to get to there. And they could feel like, hey, I could jig this spot, even with a nice spot lock these days. You know, you don't have to get out the anchor like you used to or control a trolling motor with your foot. You know, you could, you know, to jig that spot. And I got so confident that I put out, you know, slip bobbers, and I kept catching them in that one area of this otherwise featureless flat. I think the wind that day was in just the right direction. And for whatever reason, there was a school there. So I think that within walleye fishing, you have that progression down something fast. And then you start piecing it together and you can go to that spot and jig it. And then, of course, slip bobbers, unless it's like in the trees where you're not going to troll, you know, necessarily, yeah. You know, and a slip bobber makes sense. But, you know, why would you ever put down the bottom bouncer? Well, because 80% of the time I was waiting to get to this one spot and then having to turn around. So I think there's a breakthrough there. Now, let me ruin this idea for you. Try another species.
Oh, yeah.
So, bass fishing, right? It's quote so much simpler in some ways, but it isn't. It has its own list. You know, it's got Texas rigs, it's got swim baits, it's got blade baits and jigging wraps, just like walleye, but totally different situation. It's got top water. It's got, you know, the light bait kind of goes away, but now you've got to. I mean, there's a whole nother list of 8 or 10 things, and I as a bass angler, I've got this eighth grader that's going to be going into some of the bass fishing tournaments for high school and college. Like, I need to catch up. And I think I was using a pencil popper or a Zara Spook last year just to start my way down 50 fish on walking topwaters. I mean, it's add in crappie and catfish. And let me just list all, I mean, the species I've been through. So I after high school, I was a fly fishing guide, mostly trout and pike. But then, you know, in 2009, I did two things. I went on a guided trip with Nathan Zielinski, and I found out that my company had a boat that I could rent for free.
Nice.
I know. So all of a sudden, and I have, you know, that was kind of my breakthrough, and I started going fishing once a week, and that was the walleye and the smallmouth breakthrough. So let's, you know, bluegill, bass, crappie, stream trout, reservoir pike in the mountains, walleye. So I get into walleye, I write articles on walleye for a while, smallmouth bass, because that's really the other fish in the lake in Denver that I was fishing. And as soon as I got into those and I'm like getting close to 50 fish, the lake trout guy calls me and says he wanted me to do an article with him. I had told myself like weeks before, I need to just focus on walleye and bass. And then here I am up at Granby fishing for lake trout. And lake trout is just a whole nother set of skills on top of it. And then ice fishing. So now I have all these species because I was in Kansas. We don't have ice, and especially in Wichita, very often. So there's really no ice fishing culture, you know, on top of this. And I'm learning four different species. All those, that list you just said, trying to catch 50 of each. And then I moved to Kansas and almost have to start all over. So the walleye, obviously crappie and catfish, I caught like 3 crappies and 0 catfish in my whole time in Colorado. And then the other thing we're playing with now is carp, among other things like Euro carp. So put that into 10 years and you can see that you'll never get through, you know, the 50 fish. But when you get to 50, you really can understand it. So I went on a catfishing trip with some friends this weekend. I'd never been to this cove before in this one reservoir. I had never really fished for catfish totally on my own as much as this. And we caught 20 of them. I mean, it's like you have fishing skills and you can build it. But you and I joked about this before that trip, you know, because my friends are going. They think I'm a good fisherman. I'm the guy that writes the articles for the magazine. And I was, you know, as any guide is, I was afraid I wasn't going to catch very much.
Yeah.
You know, it's nerve-wracking to learn this sport and to get out there. So you're almost, you can't get back to that time on the water. As much as you love the sport, sometimes you're scared to go out because you're afraid of what you might learn, and that might be not to catch anything.
Yeah, man. Fishing is, the more you know about fishing, the more humbling fishing is. I think that's a point that some of the best teachers in the industry, even now, yeah. You know, you look at even some of these younger guys that are breaking through the industry, doing really well on, you know, some of the YouTubers, yeah. For example, you know, like you know that somebody is the real deal when they are preaching those types of lessons of like, you know, that just like fishing at the end of the day, fishing is fishing. You can't force, you know, you can't open their mouth for them. You know, or you know, and maybe you don't fish clean that day or whatever. But yeah, man, like it's so tough. You know, like not too long ago, having a Frank Regnow on the podcast, like it's so cool to hear him talk about. You know, he lives most of his life in a football locker room, right? Professional football locker room, and all these guys, they view him as like he said on the show, like they view him as like this professional angler because he fishes as much as he can. He just loves it. He pulls his boat to practice, you know, to the Detroit Lions facility. And how, you know, cool is that for us to think about having our guy there, right? Like he's real passionate and dedicated, but he's so relatable, just like us. He just, you know, he's really been getting into fishing and he's just learning, and he knows to be humble that he doesn't know anything, but like to take your buddies out or to take people out, you know. And it's like, man, they're just, you know, that pressure that you know, we probably put more on ourselves than, but yeah, you and I were definitely joking about that. Cause I got buddies that just think they can jump, that the fish just jump in my live well, but I'm still like, I'm just working my way up this ladder that we're talking about right here of like, I'm learning this stuff and I don't want to waste an opportunity of fishing where I'm not learning something where, you know, even when I'm taking somebody fishing for something, you know, this social and recreational, and we're there to have fun. But that fisherman in me that we're talking about right now, I'm still trying to learn stuff. You know, I'm still putting myself through some adversity to press the envelope and learn something, which, as we know, like you just said, it's like when you're learning stuff, that largely includes not catching fish, you know, or when fish are not jumping in the live well. So it's yeah,
right,
man.
Or you could go to the spot and you know you could catch 30 little ones or eaters in some spot, but you there's a tip or something, you need to go work on the bigger fish, or you have a tournament coming up. You can't just sit. Great that you caught one, but you got to turn around and say, hey, this is not, I need to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And try a new cove or try a new someplace you've never been, you know, to erase some of those memories for a tournament. It's a fascinating sport and kind of almost infinite in that way.
Yeah. Like, talk to me about some of the experience where you feel like you've learned the most, you know, and we're talking about the industry here, like the learning curve. When, you know, when you set out to learn something, you know, and it either happened or it was a process of happening, like it looking back on it, how would you say you've learned the most? Like, what are the situations that you've been in, or could you put your finger on, you know, cause somebody's listening to this and they're maybe wondering, you know, where to take it or what they can take from it. And, you know, this is something that I talk about all the time. It's like, you know, what type of information has helped you that you feel like, or what are some situations that you put yourself in, you know, where you just learned, where you really steepened your learning curve, you know, where you didn't just have to do it on your own, where, you know, maybe you consume some content, maybe you, you know, reached out to the right person. Talk to me a little bit about that now, looking back with some hindsight 2020 vision of like where you really learned the most, and give us some recommendations for that.
Well, I'm a very frugal fisherman. You know, just always thought I could do it myself. You know, engineering degree, I can figure this stuff out. But right there, you know, 12 years ago, I went on this guide trip because I had read everything about pike in every magazine for 15 years since high school, and I couldn't go out to the lakes in Colorado and catch pike. And then I got so bad that I found this guide, and I said, hey, you know, for my birthday, can I get a trip? You know, this is my wife. Can I get a guided trip for pike? And we went on this trip, and that guy, you know, guides have a way of, they're almost like reading a book. They tell you this story, usually in the first half an hour, of what they're doing and why they're doing it. And I think a lot of clients, it goes over their head. But that's what was worth every, we didn't even catch that many fish. But I spent 6 hours asking questions. I mean, truthfully, the guy hated me, but now we're best friends. So, I mean, he remembers that trip because he's like, you kept asking me these questions. And let me tell you, from a frugal standpoint, that guide, or even better, a mentor, and I have a couple of mentoring stories, that guided trip paid for itself. First of all, you know, I heard there were walleye in this lake near me in Colorado. I just got this boat and I'm trying to figure out what lures to buy. So I go read some articles and I buy some lures. I go on a trip with this guide and he's not using any of these lures. Like, I could have saved $200 in lures by going on the trip before even trying it on my own. I probably could have spent $50 on lures for the next 3 years because he only used three different lures. He's like, these are the lures that work on this lake. And that would, I mean... two tackle boxes and a bunch of confidence and I'm off. I mean, that was worth whatever, you know, split it with somebody. Yeah. I don't care. You know, go out and get that guide. And that might only apply to that lake, but you will never learn those details. And like we say in that series of education versus learning, you'll never learn anything from those magazines, even the ones I write for, you know, until you've gone out and done. And the guide is the fastest way. And you know, then the guide is telling you, well, I have people that realize that if I buy a $70,000 boat and a $50,000 truck and $10,000 worth of lures, I could go on a guided trip every night of the year for like 10 years and still come out ahead.
That's going to do it for the first portion of this conversation with David Harrison. And I tell you what, you come back to the next episode, we're going to wrap up this conversation, but I hope that this conversation between David and I is relatable to many of you, and it's going to help you interpret information and the content that's out there. This day and age, we're all consuming content, and we're all trying to level up as fishermen. And I think David's take on this is really, really cool. And, you know, our story's definitely, hopefully, relatable to many of you. So come back on the next episode. We're going to wrap this up. I think by the time this is all over, so many of you will hopefully be able to be self-reflective and really looking within yourself as how you can get better as anglers, thinking outside the box. Come back on the next episode. Thanks for listening.